Hello and welcome to yet another off-season episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. We're going to start to turn our eye towards next season as we are joined by Stu Ledecky of Busting Brackets. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by Matt. Stu is going to step in as our third co-host for this one as we discuss the top 20 players in the A-10 for next season. This is not just going to be us looking at everyone's stats from last year and just basically talking about who's coming back. We're going to put some spin into this and make our own predictions as to who will be the guys who run this conference. And so without further ado, we'd like to welcome in the A-10's westernmost fan, Stu Ledecky.
Thanks for having me, guys. Go UMass, and let's get this thing.
Yeah, so we'll roll into this one. I think we all agreed we're gonna start from the top here at number one and make our way down to number 20. Although I will say for everyone, I cheated and put in a 21st guy because I just don't know if Fetz Russell's gonna come back.
Yeah, I definitely had to include Fats. I gun to my head, I don't think he is either, but you can't leave him out of the top five, even if there's a possibility that he might not.
Yeah, pretty much same for me. I mean, I definitely would hope to see him back, but the offseason's kind of uncertain right now, and there's a few other guys too. So I guess real quick, we should lay out the ground rules too. There's a lot of guys that declared for the NBA. We're assuming all of them, other than Obi Toppin, will come back to the A-10. So guys like Jalen Crutcher, Jordan Goodwin, they should all be on our lists. Hopefully, yeah. Except for I don't know what you guys did, so maybe you
didn't. Yeah, Gilliard, and Daly, I included all of them too.
Okay, good. Yeah.
My Google Doc for it is called the non-Obi returning players. So let's do this.
All right.
Yeah, so good. Stu is our guest. I think we should let you declare your number one first.
All right. So this took me a while to do because there's obviously a guy who I wanted to put here as a UMass fan. And I think in a talent vacuum, if it was just who schoolyard draft, who am I picking for my team? I might pick Trey Mitchell. But I felt eventually he will deserve that title, but right now I have to give that to Jalen Crutcher. He's a guy who is on an undefeated team. He was ranked number 3. He put up great numbers, and he had, between the St. Louis game, the Kansas game, he's been in huge moments that Trey hasn't been in yet. So I just felt like Trey will have his time. I'll let him steal it from Jalen.
You know, I thought I was going to have to disagree with you right off the bat, but I'm not. I thought you were going to pick Trey. But I also, I had Jalen Crutcher. Call me a Dayton homer, whatever. But you said it. He did come from an undefeated team. And I think it's important. I don't want to confuse team success with individual success. But Dayton had either like the second or third ranked offense pretty much all of last season. And Jalen Crutcher, for a while, yeah. I think Gonzaga might have passed them at the end. Yeah. But Crutcher was so important to one of the best teams in the country. And I think you've just got to give him credit for that. One concern, I do think, though, I could see his production hurting a little bit just because he won't be sharing the floor with Obi. Because you could pretty much, if you watched Dayton last year, you could count on him getting 2 assists a game just by lobbing it up to the rim. And he's not going to have that play anymore. But I still think his ability to create his own 3-point shots, he's one of the best shooters in the league. And also, like you said, the big moments, too. I mean, he's just really experienced. And I had, with his track record, I had to go with him at number one.
Yeah. And I could counter the point that he's losing the Obi production in terms of the lobs and whatnot, but he's also gaining production from Obi not being there in terms of, all right, somebody needs to score, you know. Mm-hmm. Could be a 20 a game guy.
You know, I really wanted one of you guys to pick Trey Mitchell so that we could have an argument here, but I mean, for me, it's very easy. It's Jalen Crutcher, and really, you guys are talking about the difference between him not having Obi. He's one of the two elite battlefield generals in this conference, and that's what I'm going to refer to these guys as from now on. The guys who, for the most part, are just masters of every piece of the offense, and they sit back and let everything develop in front of them. They let their teammates get their shots. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to the moment for the big play, they take the ball into their hands and step in. And Jalen Crutcher is just the ultimate master of that. And you see it in moments like the big shot in the SLU game or just so many other clutch plays throughout the season. He truly is Jalen Crutcher. And without Obi there taking up a bunch of shots, we're going to see his scoring go up this year, but there's no reason to believe that his playmaking will go down.
Right. Yeah. So I too wanted one of us to pick Trey, and I probably wanted it to be me, but I tried to take my glasses off as much as possible, my maroon glasses off as much as possible for this thing.
Yeah. All right. So I promise that this is going to get much more, there's going to be a lot more debate coming up, but unfortunately we all had the same pick to start it off, but it should get more interesting. So I guess let's move on to number two. Stu, do you want to start us off again?
Sure. Here he is. So here's where I got Trey Mitchell. I just think in terms of who's going to dominate, purely dominate in terms of a talent standpoint, the league the most, Trey's probably, even if Jalen's, we have to give Jalen the title as like the best team leader and the guy who's been there already. I just think if you look at games like Trey against Rhodey in the last game of the year, 34-12 on 6-for-8 from three, or just who he had his best performances against, dominated Hassan French twice, dominated Marcus Weathers and Michael Hughes against Duquesne, made Marcus Santos Silva look like a poor defender in the VCU game. I just feel like every time he had a chance to show up against one of the best big men in the league, I shouldn't say every, he didn't show up against Oshun, but the things he did for a freshman just blew my mind. So I have to have that too.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. I also had Trey Mitchell number two, and it was tough. I thought what he did at the end of the season was really impressive. I thought he kind of started slow back in November, but by the end, he really lived up to the hype as the number one recruit coming into the A-10. And he's just a really solid all-around player. Even as a big man, he can step out and shoot a little bit. He's a pretty good passer. And I think this season, too, now that I think he's going to have a little bit more help on the perimeter with guys like TJ Weeks coming back and some other good freshmen coming in, I think that's going to help him out a lot. He's probably not going to face quite as much defensive pressure. And he is really talented. He is one of the leading scorers in the conference as a freshman, which is something we don't see very often in the A-10. And it's one of the few guys that really came into a program, and from day one, he was the guy for the Minutemen. And I think he's only going to get better from here.
Clearly the most talented guy in the conference, and I'll go ahead and say I have him at three. And I really think that there's a clear top four in this conference next year. And when I try to make my predictions for the season, those are the four guys that I think have a shot to be the player of the year. For me, I want to see the development in the rest of his game, both on the defensive end as a playmaker and just making a few more threes, because he takes probably more than he should at this point. But he is pure talent in this league. He's the best pure scorer in the league now that Obi's gone. And he probably should be the favorite for player of the year, just given his immense ability and given the fact that UMass should be pretty good this year. But for me, I left him at three solely because there's a guy whose game that I've always loved on a team that I absolutely am infatuated with for next year. And so at number two, I have Kyle Lofton, the other great Battlefield general of this conference right now. And we've just seen so many moments over and over in his first 2 years that when he has the proper talent around him, whether it was a healthy Courtney Stockard or a healthy Asuna Shunahi, he himself transforms into a different level of playmaker. He's a fantastic defender, borderline all defense. He's a great late game clutch guy, really in the vein of Jalen Crutcher. They're basically the same player. And Yeah. I think the Bonnies are going to be
the guy that doesn't show up on the stat sheet either.
Yeah, and that's the whole point of Kyle Lofton's game is Trey Mitchell's going to put up better numbers than him this year. There's no doubt about that. But Lofton has all of the little intangibles, and we don't know yet if Mitchell does or not. Now, if he does, he's going to win player of the landslide. But right now, I'm taking Lofton, veteran, and just an all-around fantastic player. I have him as my number two.
So when you guys, just a quick aside here, when you guys were thinking about how to go about crafting this, did you just kind of imagine like all the players kind of in a giant schoolyard and you're just saying, okay, first you, second you? Is that kind of how you did that?
So I kind of went about it from the perspective of we're drafting teams for this season and you're trying to make the NCAA tournament. So you can look at that from a perspective of, do you want a guy to carry you for 36 games? Or you can also have the guy like a Fats Russell who might just get scalding hot for 3 games in March.
I like that. Yeah, I agree with putting the emphasis on how to win games instead of just who's going to put up 20-5 or whatever.
Yeah, if it's schoolyard, Trey Mitchell's absolutely number one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm taking Kyle Lofton with the viewpoint of the whole season and also with the viewpoint of kind of taking a prediction towards how this league's going to look next year. And I love this Bonnies team going into next season.
Underrated, yeah. Everyone only talking about St. Louis and Richmond and, as always, forgetting Mark Schmidt.
Yeah, I definitely can't count him out. And I like that comparison, too, you made to Jalen Crutcher. I think Lofton and Crutcher kind of have a similar development path where they were both pretty much day one starters. I think Crutcher came off the bench his first 4 or 5 games of his career, but they've both gotten a ton of minutes to start their career. Kyle Lofton's a guy that I think started to add a three-point shot to his game, which is what Crutcher did during his sophomore year. And just the fact that they both had so much experience out there their first couple seasons in Division I basketball, I think that's huge. And they both lead their teams really well. So I like that pick for Lofton. We'll get to him in a minute on my list, but I also had him pretty high up there.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to start number three? I felt like I took the wheel on the last one.
Yeah, sure. Let's just, Tyler, I guess, do you want to just start going in groups so I could do three, five
so
here?
If not, we're going to be here for way too long.
Yeah.
I like that plan.
I kind of had him grouped as a top four. My other guy, my other player of the year candidate, and, you know, I am one grainy, empty gym video of him going 8-for-10 from the top of the key away from moving him up to number one and just going all in on him again. But I'm, of course, talking about Jordan Goodwin, who, if he develops a three-point shot, it might be a Naismith finalist next year because everything else he does is so fantastic. He's truly the best all-around player in this conference. He's the most versatile defender we have. He's a fantastic playmaker who I think would actually make a great point guard, but they don't need him to be because they have Yuri Collins. He is the best mid-range scorer we have in this conference, but yet is so willing to defer to guys like Javonte Perkins and let them get their buckets too. He's a fantastic rebounder. Every year he's the lone player to watch in the conference right now. And then number five, because I wanted to get bold with this, and every year we see a guy who's like a third teamer, maybe a fringe all-conference guy, take a giant leap into the upper echelon of the conference. And my pick for that next year is AJ Wilson, who but really where I see him continuing to improve is the same way he did as the year went on last season. He started the year as just a great role man, a guy you could throw into the dunker spot who had really good instincts, catch the ball, lay it in, or dunk it. And as the year went on, you saw him start to run the point a little bit. It's more of a gimmick. They won't do that full time, but it's something he can do. And more importantly, his three-point shot started to become a useful weapon to him. And I think this is going to be a huge breakout year for AJ Wilson in his senior season.
I can agree with that. I don't have him at five, but I love that you do because I have him at 13 and was going to talk about all the same things. So I'm glad we're on the same page that he's going to be a guy.
This was actually a tough one for me, and I guess before I get to my list, 3 through 5, I'll just talk about your picks a little bit. Jordan Goodwin, I agree. He's super versatile. He's a great player. I actually left A.J. Wilson off my top 20 list, and this was a tough one. He was one of the first guys off. Part of it for me, I just feel like I've always been down on George Mason. I just think that's a bad team. I think they're going to be pretty bad again this year. I did like that he started to make some threes at the end of last season, but I think his defense is really good, but still George Mason is a team that gets eaten alive in the post, and I feel like maybe Wilson's not quite as great of a post defender as some of the other guys, like, say, Mike Hughes and Oshun-Oshuni, for example. And then, I don't know, I still don't think Wilson's a super efficient scorer yet. He increased his production a lot last year, but I think a lot of that was just through taking more shots. I think he's super fun to watch, but a big part of it for me is that even with what he was doing as George Mason's go-to guy last year, they were still pretty bad, and I don't think they're going to get much better. He definitely has the athleticism and the tools to improve, but I think he might just do about what he did last year. I don't really see him taking a huge step forward for me. But I can see what you're doing picking him at 5, because he's got that potential, and he had a couple huge games last year.
I feel like if you're going to pick a guy who wasn't in contention for like first or second team to break out, you kind of have to look at guys who have the purely physical tools, since they can develop the rest of their game. And AJ is definitely a guy that has an NBA combine. Mm-hmm. But just as another aside, I feel like you saying that you didn't have him in your top 20, I feel like this whole exercise made me realize that that's not even that much of a slight. Like, I was looking at, because I made like a whole pool of 30 guys to choose from. And I was just thinking, like, if you had asked me before doing this, like, is Javon Green, who I don't have on my list, a top 20 player, I would have said, like, yeah, he's absolutely a top 20 player. And there are so many guys like that who I had to leave off just because 20 is elite company, you know?
It's tough. I mean, especially nowadays where I guess the A-10 decided to pick 6 guys per all-conference team. That means we have 18 all-conference players, and yeah, I had a list of about like 28 or 30 guys that I started with, and it was tough to leave some guys off, and Wilson was probably my first or second guy off, but just couldn't quite do it. Yeah. All right, so I'll go into my next little group. So starting at number 3, I have Kellen Grady. 4, I have Kyle Lofton, who we already talked about a little bit, and then 5, I have Jacob Gilliard. I guess I'll just talk about my reasoning for these guys real quick. Kellen Grady, I think, is kind of a polarizing player in the A-10 because he exploded as a freshman. And then I don't think he ever quite lived up to the hype. I mean, this was a guy that was a projected first-round pick 2 years ago, and now he's not really on the NBA radar anymore. But I just get this feeling that without John Axel Goodmanson, this is the first year where it's finally Kellen Grady's team at Davidson. He's going to be the man there. And he averaged 17 points a game last year. I see that going up. I feel like he might get to play his natural position a little bit more next year. Davidson's bringing in a pretty good big man. And I just think Grady, this is finally going to be his year where he lives up to the hype. And I also feel like he kind of gets a bad rap in the A-10 from some fans, I think. I feel like people don't realize he was still one of the best three-point shooters in the conference. And people just saw Davidson underwhelming, and they assumed Grady had a bad year, but no, it wasn't his fault. Davidson's supporting cast just wasn't very good, but Grady still had a really good year.
Agreed, yeah. I think people get, like, anti-Grady just because they expect the guy who was supposed to be, like, picked 12th or whatever in the draft, like you said.
Yeah, and
so anything less than 23 a game, it's like, this guy stinks, you know?
Yeah, and his freshman year, too, I mean, it seriously was just about on the caliber of Trey Mitchell's. I mean, he was a stud that year, and he never quite got back up to that level, but still, he's been a really good player in this conference. And then I guess I'll just move on real quick. I also had Jacob Gilliard in there. I think Richmond, they're the preseason favorite, according to a lot of people. I think he's just so important to that team's success, just the way he runs the offense. and gets his teammates involved. And then also defensively, he won Defensive Player of the Year last season. I think there's a good chance he does that again, just because he's so quick with his hands out on the perimeter. And I just think his versatility, even as a little guy, he's really good on both ends of the court. So I had him at 5.
Sounds good to me. My 3 through 5 was Goodwin, as you guys mentioned. I'm not a huge fan of his game aesthetically, just because it's kind of bully ball, the Russell Westbrook style of play. I'm not a huge, like, I want to watch that guy, but I couldn't deny, kind of like Tyler said, he's a walking triple-double threat, so I had to have him in there somewhere. Then at 4, I had Fats. I know he's streaky, and I know he's a guy that maybe he puts up huge numbers at this consequence of your team not being incredible, but I just feel like you can't leave a guy off who had a 19, 3, and 5 line on offense and then 2.9 steals per game on defense. So if he's back, I feel like I have to have him in there. And then at 5, I also had Jacob Gilliard. Just feel like he's one of the most steady guys in the league in terms of he's not ever going to put up 34 in a game, but you know he's going to go for 13-6. You know he's going to give you 45, 35, 80 shooting percentages, and you know he's going to get a lot of steals. And his team is great, as you were mentioning. So that was my 3 through 5.
So you both had Jacob Gilliard at 5. I have him coming up very soon. And for me, I think the only reason he's not in the top 5 is, as last year went on and as Grant Golden's role continued to expand within the offense, I just really struggled to separate the two of them as to who was more responsible for Richmond's success. And if Richmond turns out to be the fantastic top 2 team that a lot of people think that they will be this year, I think that we're headed towards a very interesting argument in late February where we could possibly be trying to figure out, well, hey, Richmond's about to go 15-3. Who's player of the year, Grant Golden or Jacob Gilliard? Because I think that both of them are really pretty even in terms of how they impact Richmond's success. And so I guess that's probably the only reason why I have Gilliard lower than you guys. But I got no problem with him being in the top 5. Where I do have a problem is Kellen Grady at 3.
Yeah.
And there's no denying the incredible talent. There's no denying the scoring numbers. I think he's going to put up 20 points a game next year. But to me, he has shown that he can be a fantastic number 2 or number 3, as he was for Peyton Aldridge, as he was for John Axel Goodmanson 2 years ago. But what we've seen, and this is really what came out in November and December of last year, is that Grady's just not a good enough playmaker to carry a team on his back. And if he doesn't have a good point guard with him, and I know they got a fantastic recruit coming in at the point guard position, but with John Axel gone, Grady's going to have to carry this team. And I just think that we're headed towards a universe where Kellen Grady just ends up being a good stats, bad team guy this year.
Yeah, we're gonna have differing opinions on Davidson this year, that's for sure. I'm ashamed to say this after how they let everyone down last year, but I'm actually kind of optimistic about the Wildcats. And yeah. I almost feel like Grady, I don't know, he's never really had that chance. I know the beginning of last season, John Axel wasn't quite himself, so Grady had to take over a little bit, but I don't know. I just think this is finally the year. I don't think he gets enough respect within this conference. And we'll see. I just think he's such a versatile player that even if Davidson doesn't have maybe a true point guard, and that kind of depends on how their freshmen do, because they have a couple guys that could maybe run the point, I think Grady's good enough on his own that he can still create for himself a little bit. But I knew that was going to be a controversial one, especially based on how I've talked to you about him, Tyler, but that's okay. I think he's due for a big year.
Are you referring to my 3 a.m. text where I told you that I was considering leaving Grady off entirely?
Yeah, I saw that and I knew this was going to be a fun episode, so I was right.
Davidson's impossible to project this year. I feel like I was trying to do tiers of the conference the other day, and I just feel like they were a team where it's like if you told me they finished fourth, I wouldn't be really surprised. But if you also told me they finished 10th, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're definitely in that zone where they could really finish anywhere. I don't think they're quite a contender, but it's still going to be a solid team, I think. So, All right, I guess, are we ready to move on? How about, do you want to just all read off our 6 through 10, and then we can just sort of pick up the discussion there with, depending on who we say in this section?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it. You take it first here.
All right. Number 6. So this is the pick I had where it was a borderline all-conference guy that I think is ready to make the jump to being an elite player. And Tyler, you're going to like this one. I have Sincere Carey, number 6.
Nice.
Grant Golden, number 7. Jordan Goodwin, number 8. So I'm lower on him than you guys. Ryan Daly, number 9. And then Fats Russell, number 10, which I think might be pretty low, but I'll talk about him after you guys give your lists.
Fair enough. I'll give my 6 through 10. I have Javonte Perkins, Kyle Lofton, Kellen Grady, Grant Golden, and Busy Bones Highland coming in at number 10.
Wow, so differing opinions on a few of these guys, but I do have all of them on my list in some form or fashion. 6 and 7, and I basically made these like 6A, 6B. As I mentioned before, I don't know how to separate the contributions of Grant Golden and Jacob Gilliard. So right. I put Golden at 6, Gilliard at 7. Fats Russell at 8. That team's going to be bad this year, even if he's back. He's going to be so fun to watch if he plays for Rhodey, but it's going to be a lot of empty stats. And then I 9 through 12 for me all can kind of go different ways. And I almost had Carey in this group, but I left him off. Marcus Weathers at 9, and then E.B. Watson at 10.
I have E.B. on my list, but you're higher on him than I am.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I like it. Of course I like it. I'm a Dayton fan.
So, Stu, defend Javonte Perkins all the way up at 6, because I was one of the guys who really – I thought I campaigned hard for him to get some great recognition and postseason awards this year, but – I don't know. I'm a little down on him for next season, just given how Slew's roster is going to look.
My thing is that when he became who he was in the second half of the year, he took Slew to another level. So I feel like if he can keep scoring at the rate he was scoring at, he's the X factor in Slew being a definite NCAA tournament team. If you look at I was looking at his reference page. If you look at his last 14 games of the year, he averaged 19.9 points per game. And I just feel like when we talk about the pros and cons of St. Louis, it's always the fact that they have no finesse game and that they can't shoot from outside. So a new level makes them elite. And he's a threat to put up 30 a game, which there aren't a lot of guys like that in the league.
So this, for me, was the toughest guy on the whole list to figure out because he was the engine for SLU. And I said over and over again going into the A-10 tournament that if SLU was going to win, Javonte Perkins was basically going to have to put up 75 points in three days. So does he continue to be the guy who was just an unstoppable bucket getter for the last month of the year? Or does he slow down for really two possible reasons? Either one, opposing defenses start to key in on him more because they realize he really is their only true outside threat. Or two, these guys like Gibson Jimerson or the transfer Lindzen take away some of that offensive load from him. And he becomes kind of, I don't want to say not their number one, but basically a less threatening number one, where he is sharing the ball more and other guys are taking the scoring load from him. And so that one was a really tough one for me. I have him way lower list, and I think if we redo this list 3 months from now, I could have him 10 spots up, or I could have him off entirely.
Yeah.
The one wild card for me. I can't figure him out.
For sure. I agree that he's a risky pick. I'm just banking on him.
He's got that talent, as we saw in the second half of conference play. And really, I think it was the first Dayton game where if you look at his stats before and after that game, that's kind of when he turned the corner. I had him pretty far down too, and I won't say where because we'll get to that later. But I'm just kind of low on St. Louis in general this year. I tweeted out from my personal account about a week ago, A10 Talk asked for your hot takes. And I said St. Louis was going to go 10-8 in the A10, and people were not happy, understandably.
Oh, man.
I just feel like this
team... I'm sure your notifications were wild.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but I don't care. It wouldn't be a hot take if I said they'd go like 12-6. So that's kind of my bold one, and we'll talk about that more over the offseason, I'm sure. But I just feel like offensively, this team isn't as good as people think. For me, I'm just not quite sold on Perkins' track record yet. Because really, the first half of the season, he wasn't anything special. And maybe that's just because he was making that transition from JUCO, and it took him a while to get going and to adjust to Division One. But I also had Jordan Goodwin pretty low, too. I guess I'll talk about him real quick. I just feel like he's a great player. He averaged 15-10, which is kind of nuts for a guard. I just don't really see him improving on that at all, because I don't think he's going to suddenly learn how to shoot this year. So I kind of just think that's his ceiling right now, and I could be wrong. If he starts shooting 35-40% on threes, he's going to get way better. I just don't see that happening. But as for those guys, I think I had them both a little bit lower than most people probably would, just because I don't think St. Louis's offense is going to be that great this year. I think it'll be pretty average at best.
I think that's fair to say.
So my final two comments on the SLU guys. I feel like where you Perkins is kind of just showing of how you feel about SLU going into next season. Where if you think SLU is going to win this conference and they're going to be a surefire NCAA tournament team, then he easily becomes a first team all conference candidate. But if like Matt and you feel like they could be a disappointment, then there's a pretty decent chance that he's not on the all conference teams altogether. And then for Goodwin, I mean, I keep talking about the shot improving, and it sounds like I'm grasping for straws, but to me, every time I watch him take a jumper, his form looks beautiful. And I honestly just can't wrap my head around the fact that he's a bad three shooter. And I just feel like it could literally click at any moment. Like one day he might just get into the gym and start shooting like Ibby Watson out of nowhere.
It seems like
I don't know.
It's game randomly he'll have like a 3-for-5 from three, and you're like, why can't you do that all the time? You know?
Yeah, no, and it's just crazy because he does look good shooting it, but he's three seasons into his college career, and he's a 26% career 3-point shooter and a 56% free throw shooter. So I don't know. It looks like he should be better than the numbers, but after 3 years, I don't see that getting much better. Which it's too bad. I mean, he's still a great player, and he is probably the biggest threat to get a triple-double in the A-10. But I am down on St. Louis, too. I mean, I should just get that out of the way. It is what it is. Sorry, guys.
I think we need to have somebody who is, because people are only hyping them up.
I know.
Equilibrium. Yeah.
VCU and Davidson were terrible last year compared to how everyone thought. And I'm not saying that's a reason it's going to happen again, but I guess I just think that's a warning. Like, just because those teams are the favorite, you can't sharpie them in to the top of the standings. There's hopefully a season to be played where we're going to find out what really happens.
I think I fall victim to that mentality sometimes where I'm like, I'm doing my own rankings and like, I kind of just automatically put Richmond and SLU at 1 and 2 just because like, that's what's going around everywhere. And I have to ask myself, like, do I really think that, you know?
Yeah, it's tough.
I think I do, but time will tell. Mm-hmm. It'll be a long summer. So I wanted to ask you, Matt, what was with Sincere Carey top 10?
Yeah, so I had Sincere Carey at 6. I think this is time for the breakout. He's another point guard like Crutcher and Lofton. His first two seasons, he's been a huge part of his team. He actually kind of regressed last year, which was a little bit surprising to me, even though Duquesne was better as a team, but Sincere Carey's numbers were about the same as his freshman year. I think this is the year that he really takes a step forward. A couple reasons. One, I think his defense is going to get back to where it was his freshman year when he had one of the best steal rates in the conference. He really didn't have as many steals last year, which was kind of surprising to me, but I think he is an overall good defender. But in general, I just think his offensive game is really well-rounded. I think he's a really good passer, and I think his assist rate's going to go back up to where it was when he was a freshman. And I think in terms of getting to the rim, he's just about as quick as it gets in the A-10. And I think once he's already good at getting to the rim, once he improves at finishing those shots, I think his points per game is going to go way up. And I just feel like as he makes that transition to being an upperclassman, it's going to be his team this year. And really, he's got some pretty solid help around him. So I think he could be able to just dish out a lot of assists, and it's going to be his year. I was surprised that he's never made an all-conference team yet in his career, because he has been really good at Duquesne for two seasons. And I think it's his time.
I think
I see him as the third true battlefield general of this conference with Crutcher and Lofton.
Yeah.
But he's not at the same elite level as those two yet. And the biggest reason is just, even though all three of them tend to disappear on the stat sheet in various games, Crutcher and Lofton never disappear on the court. And Carey still has a tendency to kind of do that, where he'll go 5-6 minutes, you feel like he's not out there. Now, the case for the other side is basically just watch the last 4 minutes of their home game against GW last year, where they were making this insane comeback with the press, and Carey just decided he was going to try to win that game single-handedly, and he almost did. And that's where you see all the talent. Now, for me, there's definitely going to be a Duquesne player in the top 10 next year. It might be Carey, it might be Weathers. Hell, it might even be Michael Hughes. But I just think the way this team is constructed, you're basically picking either Carey or Weathers as a possible first team guy. And the reason I have Weathers at 9 is I think he hit his peak in January. And I think that this team really figured out the perfect way to use him. And the only reason why he didn't carry it through into February, and Dan Brott talked about this at the end of the year, and he admitted it really late, because if you saw him in person at the beginning of February, it was clear that his leg was not right. And he faded off because he just, quite frankly, wasn't moving correctly on the court. I think that they've found this perfect formula of Marcus Weathers, the double-double threat, and quite frankly, the matchup nightmare, where no one else in this conference has the proper power forward to guard him. And I think the path of best success for Duquesne this year is to play through Marcus Weathers as their key point. Now, Carey's still going to have to be the final minute guy. And I think Carey's the most talented guy on this team. But I think the way this team is going to go is they're going to play through Weathers on offense. They're going to play through Hughes on defense. And Carey's going to be the all-critical number two on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair point. I guess one more guy I just want to quickly talk about, and then we can move on to the next tier. I have Fats Russell down at 10, which seems kind of disrespectful after the great season he had last year. I really could see him struggling this year on Rhode Island, because I don't think he's going to have that much help around him. I know Rhode Island, they're a tough team to project because they are bringing in so many new guys. They have a couple solid transfers and freshmen coming in. But I just have a bad feeling he's going to slip back into his hero ball moments where he starts putting up bad shots. And I really think not sharing the backcourt with Jeff Doughton anymore, I think that's going to hurt him, because I think Doughton was just the perfect complement to kind of slow Fats down and keep the Rhode Island offense organized. So we'll see. That could be way too low. And we already talked about how we're not quite sure he's going to come back to Rhode Island next year. But I could just see it being a tough year for both Fats and the Rams.
Yeah, he could go off for even better numbers. He could put up 22 or 23, or he could have a year like Pipkins in his last year at UMass, where he's 29% from three and he's getting 18 a game, but it's on 6-for-16 and right, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I literally wrote down in my notes here, Fats could average 20 points, but at what cost? Like, I'm not sure how much better he's going to make
terrible.
His team.
What did it cost?
Yeah. So, I hate to say that because he was great last year.
Before we move on, the other hot take, I can't forget to ask you the rationale for EB in the top 10.
Yeah.
So, I had him down at 13, and then I actually moved him up right before we started this. And I think he's a guy who did the best he could last season in accepting the necessary role, which was bench spark plug. And now you look around at this Dayton roster. Well, of course you got Jalen Crutcher, but we know he doesn't want to be the guy to carry the scoring load. So who's going to do that for what I think is still going to be a really good Dayton team next year? Mm-hmm. And Watson is the obvious guy to step into that role. We saw so many different moments, especially like the Davidson game, where he was really this incredible scoring threat. His shot is beautiful. It's one of the best pure strokes in this conference. And I think he's been waiting for the moment that's going to come to him next year where he becomes the guy to carry the offense for Dayton. He's got a fantastic mid-range game. He's a beautiful three-point shooter. And if he can start to become a more lethal driver for this team and really kind of fill in some of those layups that they're losing from Obi and Trey Landers, then he's a surefire all-conference player for this team. I think he's really going to take his new role in stride and become that number two guy and become Crutcher's true sidekick on this team.
I think if he can do that, if he can become a better finisher around the rim and have a more complete mid-range game, I think that's kind of the big difference between Dayton being a good team, like fourth through sixth range, and Dayton competing with Richmond and SLU for the title.
Yeah, I think his true talent just didn't shine through last year. It just kind of came through in these micro bursts, and it was more a symptom of just having so many good players around him than it was him not being ready to be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, he still put up 10. He found a way in that crowded offense to put up 10 a game still. So that right there says something.
I'm disappointed because I had Ibby coming up pretty soon. I can't believe you were higher on him than me because I pretty much have the exact same reasoning. I think there's a lot of points to be had on Dayton next year. And Ibby averaged 10 playing kind of a reduced role. I mean, he's usually like the third option when he is on the court. I think he could average 15 or 16. He's super efficient and one of the best three-point shooters in the conference when he's open. So I like that pick a lot. And I think he's a good pick to be Dayton's number two guy. But
he's such an incredible scorer, and just things are going to line up really well for him this year. It's basically my case.
I hope so.
So before we go to 11 through 15, just real quick, Stu, can you talk about Bones Highland? Because when I went through various iterations of this list, I did have him in the border of the top 10, but I settled with him a little bit lower. And I mean, part of it is just Santos Silva being gone. I think the load he's going to be asked to carry is just going to be brutal for him.
I agree with that. I'm banking on him living up to his top 100 hype and just becoming an absolute baller in the league, like a first or second team all conference type of guy. I just feel like we saw it in flashes last year where it was like this kid, even against good teams, it's like this kid is maybe the best player on the court at this very moment. And I just feel like now that he's got his freshman year behind him, he knows what he needs to work on as far as physical beefing up and conditioning. I just feel like all the skill is there for him to be one of the best players in the league and maybe even an NBA player later on. I just feel like now is the perfect opportunity. It could be a bust, like you're saying, because everyone's going to know to throw two or three guys at him, but I just feel like he has the talent to make it happen.
For me with Bones, I think it comes down to coaching, where it's basically going to be, how does Mike Rhodes want to play this offense? If they play this just like crazy turbo havoc offense and just tell Bones to run like the wind and utilize the athletic wings around him, then you're absolutely right. He's going to be a top 10 guy. And I agree with every point you made about the incredible talent, but for me, I'm almost afraid Mike Rhodes is going to try to play things slow. And if they do that, people are just going to smother Bones. He's just going to have to chuck up a bunch of bad threes all year.
Right. Might have a little Fats Russell, the negative side of Fats Russell syndrome.
Yeah, we'll see. Bones is super talented. I mean, I think he really turned a corner. When VCU's offense was struggling, he turned it on in conference play, and with the news of Marcus Santos Silva transferring, he's going to have to be the go-to guy for the Rams. And he's got that ability. I actually moved Bones down a couple spots after Santos Silva left, just because I think not having another reliable scorer on the court is going to hurt him as a point guard a little bit. But I have him in my list coming up. He's a really good player and one of the best sophomores in the conference.
And it should be noted, was actually higher rated than Trey Mitchell as a recruit. I know those don't, it's kind of ticky-tacky to look back at the exact numbers, but not for nothing, just to be noted.
Yeah, that is interesting. All right, I think it's time, if you guys are ready, let's move on to 11 through 15. Stu, do you want to start off with your list?
Sure. Here's where I had Ryan Daly at 11. Just felt like another guy kind of like Fats, where you just couldn't ignore the numbers he was putting up, even if he's a guy that might not be the best in terms of making everyone around him better. I just feel like in terms of pure talent, I had to have him towards the top 10. I had Hassan French. Here's where I had AJ Wilson. 14 is Sincere Carey, and 15 is the best rim protector in the league in Oshun.
So, actually, four of those guys I had in the same range too, but I started things off with my favorite dark horse in the conference. Everyone's going to say too high. I'm almost afraid he's too low. At number 11, TJ Weeks.
Oh, let's go. I love that.
Wow.
And then I followed up with Carey at 12, Ashanti at 13, Daly at 14, and French at 15.
Okay. So basically the same, but
pretty much.
But you had my guy instead of me having my guy. I like that.
All right. How dare you? No Kelvin Grady yet. Wow. I mean, I'm not even
We're
a Davidson
close. We're
fan.
Very close.
I don't even like Davidson, but I'm shocked. Okay. So my first couple are similar to your guys. I had Oshun at 11. I had Ibby Watson at 12, Hassan French at 13. Here is one of my biggest sleepers, and it's part of the reason I'm all in on Davidson next year. I have Hyungjoon Lee at 14.
Ooh,
we'll talk about
nice.
Him in a minute.
Takes.
Yeah, and then I have Blake Francis at 15.
Okay. What is we can get into Lee right now. What was the thinking?
He's a guy that passed the eye test for me when I watched Davidson last year, because I think he's a guy that can score at all levels. He's really good at driving to the basket. His field goal percentage at the rim was actually one of the best in the A-10 last year. And if you just watch him shoot the ball, I think he's one of the best pure outside shooters. And last year that helped him be efficient because he was like the third or fourth option for Davidson. This year he's definitely going to take on a bigger load, and I think that might hurt his efficiency, but he's a guy that averaged, I have in front of me, 8.5 points a game, not really getting a ton of minutes and getting a ton of shots up, but I could really see him jumping up to in the 14 or 15 range. I will say part of this pick is that I'm hoping he bulks up as a sophomore, because he came in as a pretty skinny freshman, wasn't a physical player at all. So I'm hoping that maybe his body develops a little bit now that he has a year of experience under his belt. But I just see his potential as a scorer as being really good. And now that Davidson doesn't have John Axel, they're going to need a number two guy to step up and help out Kelvin Grady. And I just think Lee has that potential. But I realize that's pretty high, and he's pretty unproven at this point. He's just one of those freshmen from last year that I think has serious potential to make a huge jump next season.
Yeah, he was on my bubble, so I'm glad one of us had him.
Yeah,
I felt like he deserved to at least get one of the three.
Yeah, that was one of my bold ones, I think, but I just liked watching him last year. I think he's a very skilled player. Even as a freshman, he looked comfortable on the court. And I am interested to see how his game changes now that he's probably going to have to take more shots and he's going to be more of a focal point for Davidson, but I just think he's talented enough on offense that he'll be able to handle it and still be pretty efficient overall. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. Tyler, TJ Weeks, talk to me.
Yeah.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to TJ Weeks Enclave. I've been waiting to have this discussion since November. I think if he hadn't gotten hurt, he was going to be borderline all-conference last year. He's on that pace, and so I wouldn't basically seen him play because the only guy who have this ingrained in their mind are just the UMass fans and the A-10 fans who cared enough to watch random Tuesday night November UMass games. I talked about this a little bit last episode with Jay Burnham. I've never seen a freshman come into this league and just have the combination of confidence, pure athleticism, and just basically beautiful intangibles that Weeks has. He looks like a guy who is perfectly set to come in, dominate this conference from the wing, and then eventually make his way to the NBA. Mm-hmm. And just one of the big things is I can't remember the last time I've seen an A-10 player of that size with such a beautiful shot. We yeah. tend to see it with guards and role players, basically, where the guys who are as good of a shooter as TJ Weeks are guys who all they do is shoot. Because if not, you just simply end up in a bigger school, in a better conference. And just every time I watched him play, even when he was missing shots, I was blown away by the incredible confidence he had attacking the basket. There was this great fearlessness there, and just every part of his form is so pure. And I fully anticipate him to be a 16, 17 point a game scorer right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Now, his defense, he's going to need to improve a little bit to become a future first team guy. But I just think all the offensive tools are there already, and yeah. he's got to polish them and hone them.
I agree with you, especially in terms of his upside. I feel like he's one of the potential NBA players that the league has right now just because of his mix of height and shooting. You're right about his stroke. I just feel like every time he puts it up, he is one of those that's going in type of shots where it's you're surprised if he's open and he misses. Obviously, 49% from three is going to come down. But I still feel like he could be, like you're saying, 15, 16 a game on, say, 42 to 44% range.
If he does that, UMass is going to be good next year. I'll just say it. I mean, it's disappointing we didn't get to see him play a full season last year because they could have been a sleeper in the conference. I didn't put him on my list. I think he's really talented, but we haven't even seen him play an A-10 game yet because he got hurt before the conference season started. And he definitely has the upside of being a borderline top 10 player. I just couldn't quite make that pick yet, although I do like the boldness. Just watching him, he's another guy that I think passes the eye test because of how pretty his shot is. And he can get really hot in a hurry, as we saw in limited action last year.
Yeah, he had a 6-for-6 game, which I don't remember seeing
yeah.
from an A-10 player.
Tyler, can you repeat your 13 and 14? I missed those. I'm trying to write them down as we go.
Ashunahi at 13 and Daly at 14.
Okay. I don't really disagree with those. I guess Daly's kind of an interesting one, and we all had him around the same. I had him up at 9. Stu had him at 11. It's kind of tough to tell how good Daly actually is or if it's just the great stats on a horrible team from last year. But man, his stats were just so impressive, and I really think it's tough because St. Joe's was one of the worst teams we've seen in the A-10 in a while. But I felt like his ability to be pretty efficient, taking as many shots as he did, plus the fact that he kind of had to play out of position last year. He wasn't really a natural point guard. And I'm thinking this year, St. Joe's has a couple guards transferring in Greg Foster and Demir Bishop. So I'm thinking if one of them can step up at the point, Daly might get helped out by getting to play off the ball, which is what he did at Delaware before he got in the A-10. So that was kind of my reasoning for having him higher, but that's a tough one just because he was on such a bad team, so you don't really know how truly those stats reflect his ability.
Right. How good does he make everyone around him?
For sure.
You did mention the efficiency, though, and I was surprised that he shot 43%. Overall for the year. I thought he was kind of just jacking up. I would have expected probably 36, 37. So that number stood out to me and made me think, okay, yeah, he definitely deserves this spot.
Yeah, I mean, he's never been a great three-point shooter, but he's still pretty good at getting to the rim and taking as many shots as he did. I mean, he had to be the guy for St. Joe's, and I still think it's funny that they did beat Davidson the game he was hurt, which
yeah,
that was kind of a Ewing theory thing we had going on for a couple days. But
Yeah, I like that.
But no, I think St. Joe's, they're going to be a little bit better this year. Still not very good, but they're going to win more than six games, and I think Daly's going to have another good season.
For sure.
Yeah, the other two guys we didn't talk about, we all kind of have Ashunahi and French in the same range, and it's kind of the same range that they've both been in this whole time, so I don't know if either of you two have any specific comments for these guys. I just think we kind of already know who they both are.
I agree with that.
Yeah, for Oshun, I had him a little bit higher than you guys. I had him up at 11. For me, I think part of it, you look at his numbers since he's gotten at St. Bonaventure, he's always been really efficient, but he's never been that important to the Bonnies on offense. He's always been a defense-first kind of guy, and he's still an elite rim protector, one of the best defensive centers in the A-10. But I think this is going to be the year, actually, where St. Bonaventure starts giving him the ball more inside, and I think he's going to increase his scoring. He's already really good at finishing around the rim, and I kind of expect to see his production go up a little bit. I think they're going to try to get him more shots, and with that increased scoring, I think he has a chance to be a second-team guy next year. But, yeah, I think for both him and French, we both kind of know who they are as great defenders and pretty good offensive players too,
just really steady.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
I came in wanting to put him higher, and then basically just as I kind of formed the list, there were just too many guys that I just couldn't make the case for putting them below him. So
yeah.
Should we do 16 through 20?
Yeah,
so I'm thinking here, because I'm hoping we all have kind of some bold picks at the bottom. You guys want to do 16 through 18, and then we can wrap it up at the very end?
Sure, we can do that. All right, Tyler, you can start us off.
Yeah, so here, three guys that have already been mentioned and talked about here for me. Here's Kellen Grady at 16, ooh. Bones Highland, 17, Javonte Perkins, 18.
Okay.
Scores.
So I have one pretty bold pick here, I'd say. I have Dominic Welch for St. Bonaventure at 16, Marcus Weathers at 17, and then I have Bones down at 18, so about the same as you.
Okay, I had Weathers 16, TJ Weeks 17, and yes. Blake Francis 18. So I'm with you on, I also bought a summer home on TJ Weeks Island.
Wait, who did you have at 18? I'm sorry.
Blake Francis.
Okay. So I guess I still think you have Kellen Grady too low, Tyler, but we already talked about him. Yeah, these all seem pretty fair. I guess for me, I'm the only one that's had Dominic Welch so far. I've just always thought, I think he's one of the most athletic wings in the conference. He's a really good rebounder. I think Tyrese Martin, who used to be on Rhode Island, but now he transferred, I think he's kind of similar to Martin, just a really good athletic rebounding wing. And he's a great three-point shooter, too. I think as a freshman, Welch was kind of just a three-point specialist. He didn't really take it to the hole, but last year he became a lot more well-rounded. And I do think the Bonnies are going to be a pretty solid team next year, so I expect his production to go up. The Bonnies also weren't that good on defense last year, but I think Welch is going to be one of those guys that turns it around. Just I remember watching him as a freshman even, and I was impressed by his on-ball defense, so I think he's going to bring that to the team this year. And overall, he's never really been in any all-conference discussions, but I think that's going to change this year. And I think he's ready for a breakout.
And you mentioned rebounding. He had some games where it's like you look at the box score and he had like 13 or 14. It's like, where did that come from?
Especially at the end of the season, too. His rebounding went way up at the end of conference play. So I think that's big. And just his versatility with scoring and rebounding, I think he's kind of an underappreciated player in my eyes.
I really like that. I couldn't put him in the top 20, though, because maybe we should have just done it all here. Why I didn't have him in the top 20 will make more sense in a minute.
Okay.
And then I want to mention Blake Francis, because And I know, Matt, you had him up at 15.
Yeah.
He ended up being my final cut. And I went over and over again to try to figure out how to put him on the list. And honestly, if I hadn't just taken some bold sleepers at the end, he would have been on there.
Yeah.
I think he ends up in the top 20, but there were just some names that I really wanted to talk about. And in the end, for me, I think the biggest detriment for him is between Francis Sherrod and Tyler Burton. I think those three are just going to steal from each other. And we saw after he came back from injury that as they really started to run this Golden-centric offense, it slightly devalued everyone else in that offense. And so Blake Francis is a great player, but I actually think his scoring numbers are going to go slightly down next year. Not because of him, but because Richmond's just better set up around him.
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably won't get 17, maybe 13, 14.
I guess one thing, too, I thought his defense improved at the end of the year. That gave him a little bump for me. In general, Richmond's defense, too, as a team was way better than I could have expected. And it's kind of tough to predict Richmond's production from their individual guys just because there are a lot of mouths to feed on that team, and there's a lot of guys that can shoot the ball. So I think Francis is a guy that could probably average a lot more points on a different team. Like, you put him on Duquesne or, I don't know, just a team that needs a three-point shooter, he could probably average 20. But I think on Richmond, hopefully that allows him to be a little bit more efficient. And I feel like he's kind of a steady guy. He can also get really hot, too, and be one of the most dangerous three-point shooters at times.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Agreed.
I guess let's move on. Final two picks for everyone. I can start us off this time. I had Javonte Perkins at 19, which I feel like that might be too low, but he's one of those guys I just don't really see him doing any better next year. And then this might be a homer pick at 20, but I'm ready to defend it. I have Rodney Chapman from Dayton for my last pick.
Let's go.
Do you have him too?
No, I don't, but I had him in consideration because, I guess I'm not revealing anything because we put our ballots out publicly, you and I, after we did the media vote, but I was one of the two guys to put Rodney Chapman on the all-defensive team. So,
all right.
I'm certainly okay with that.
He was like that whole like between 20 and like 27 was just a giant tie, and he was one of those guys for me.
Yeah, the last couple picks were tough.
Yeah, he didn't make it, but he very easily could have.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he'll prove to me that he should have. My last two guys were EB and Michael Hughes.
Okay, I like those picks.
All right, so I remember I said I cheated because to me Fats is an asterisk because I just don't. I think there's a higher than 50% chance that he doesn't come back. So I actually went to 21. And for me, I have two sleepers and then one that I didn't think anyone was going to have. But 19, I have Jaren English.
Mm-hmm.
At 20, I also have Michael Hughes. And then I guess my bonus pick at 21, Jameer Nelson Jr.
Wow.
I like that.
That's a good pick.
So I guess
one of the GW guys, because that was my problem. I was looking at there were three GW guys on the bubble for me, but none of them could get over the hump. So what were you thinking with Jameer?
So basically, I wanted to reserve my final spot, and this is probably the spot that should Blake Francis. But I wanted to reserve for just one of the young deep sleepers out of a whole crew of guys that I like for that spot, and. Yeah. For me, I think Jameer, he came in with a lot of hype basically because he's Jameer Nelson Jr. Mm-hmm. And we really didn't people who dove in as to who he was as a recruit didn't expect a ton from him. And he didn't do a ton in the non-conference. But then once we got into late January, he started to really come alive. And when you look at his game log as the season went on, his numbers went up, his scoring numbers went up. But most importantly to me, his free throw numbers went up aggressively. Mm-hmm. And he ended up finishing 24th in the A-10 in free throw attempts. He's a guy who's shown himself to be completely fearless going to the I think that's just going to continue next year. His three-point shot was not great. His numbers came in at under 30%. I think that that's going to be a natural progression for him next year. But he's the type of guy that just showed as a friend that he a different player in February than he was the rest of the year. And that's exactly what you want to see from these young guys. He's got another step in him next year for certain. The only question is, does he have a big enough step to truly justify the spot?
And I thought last year he was under-talked about, too. I felt like in terms of young point guard, about Collins, people talked about East, but I felt like maybe because UW was a bottom four team, people just kind of forgot about him. But impressive numbers.
And he's definitely a guy that improved a lot in conference play, because I remember at the beginning of last season, he started, played pretty poorly. He was just really inefficient turning the ball over, and he actually got benched for a little while. But by the time January rolled around, he was back to being a pretty productive guard. And next year, with GW losing Armel Potter, they're going to need a point guard that can distribute and run that mayhem offense we hear so much about. They have a lot of three-point shooters on that team, and someone's going to need to get them the ball. So I like Nelson as a bold pick. He definitely has that upside to make an impact. And if GW wants to have any hope of being good next year, Nelson's going to have to be in this range of players.
And someone's going to have to step into the role. And when you look at Nelson, CO Jack, and Jameson Battle, for big separators, just free throw numbers. Mm-hmm. Or Nelson's already just shown a fearlessness and a skill go to the hoop that those other two just don't possess right now.
Yeah, and we kind of know Battle's a guy who could develop, but we kind of know what Jackie is by this point in his career.
Yeah, I think so. I guess
so, Matt, did you have a 21st pick? Or?
Yeah, I think I do. I have a short list of guys. I was close to putting Nick Sherrod on my list. I think he kind of gets overlooked on Richmond because he's like the fourth option most of the time, but he's one of the best three-point shooters in the conference, and he's also a pretty good rebounder. And even though he's only 6'4", I think he can play bigger than he actually is sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think part of it for me is just he doesn't take a ton of shots for Richmond since he does have guys ahead of him. But if you look at his shooting numbers in Richmond's wins and losses last year, when he shot the ball well, Richmond was so much more successful. I want to say he shot around 50% on threes in Richmond's wins and around 30% in their losses. So he's kind of one of those X factors that I think gets overlooked. But when he's hitting, that just opens up Richmond's offense so much, because that pretty much means when he's hot, you need to worry about all five of their players. But
yeah,
I kind of feel like he's just a little bit too much of a role player for me to put him on this list. I still like him a lot, but he was just short for me. And then AJ Wilson, too, who we already talked about. I wanted to put him on the list, but I'm not sure he's quite consistent enough.
Fair enough. Yeah, my 21st pick would be a guy who I've always been a fan of, Javon Green. And it's kind of like Wilson, he's not consistent. Like, he could either put up 8 or, like, sometimes he can just take over a game out of nowhere, like against Richmond when he put up 39. I just feel like it's only a select few guys in the league that have the ability under any circumstance to put up 39. So I just had to, if he's got that in him, I think he has the potential to find it more consistently.
Yeah, that's a good pick. For me, he was close. He was in my first four or five out. I've just always kind of thought of him as a good stats, bad team guy. And this is just another time where I'm going to poop on George Mason, because I never think they're very good. But no, he does put up good stats, and he did blow up for a couple huge games last year. So he's definitely got that potential to be one of these guys.
George Mason is one of those frustrating teams where it seems like it's easy to see them like 5 through 7. It's kind of like Duquesne, where it's easy to see them being like a more than solid team going like 10-8, 11-7, but it's hard to see what they have that like that really gives them that extra little bit to help them win the league.
So, Stu, since we both had him at 20, I want to hear your logic behind Michael Hughes.
I just felt like I wanted to have a guy towards the bottom of the list because I had a lot of shooters, so I wanted to get another defensive specialist in there, and I couldn't ignore the fact that Hughes averaged 3 blocks a game, and it's not like he's devoid on the other end either. I don't have his stats in front of me, but I feel like he must have been like a 12-7, 12-8 kind of guy. So I felt like just his overall game warranted a top 20 appearance.
Yeah, for me, I really only see one other guy with the same level of defensive value and defensive versatility as him, and that's Jordan Goodwin. Mm-hmm. We saw all of last year, of course, we've known for a long time he's a fantastic rim protector, a great defensive center, but he showed so much more versatility, just being able to go out and guard shooters on the perimeter, getting a ton of steals, and that's going to be important again with Austin Rotrov and Amari Kelly needing to play big minutes on this team. Hughes is not going to be able to just guard the centers all the time. Mm-hmm. He gives Duquesne so much flexibility in their rotation. He's a great role guy. And for me, I mean, the only thing keeping him from going higher is the 1.5 idiotic fouls a game that he takes. Yeah. Because this guy's just in foul trouble way too often. And half the time it is his own fault.
That's sort of what that costs him a spot on my list. I think when he's having a good game, he's probably a top 10 player in the A-10, but he just disappears a little bit too much for me, and I was close to putting him on my list, but every once in a while, he just has too many games where it's like 15 minutes, 4 fouls, 2 points, and I don't know. I like him. I think he's great on defense, but he's never really figured out how to cut down on the fouls, and if this is the year where he can stay on the court and stay disciplined, then he's a first or second team guy. I really think he has the potential, but he just hasn't shown that yet, in my opinion.
Fair enough. The Duquesne front court defensively is going to be really good between him and Weathers.
The whole Duquesne defense is going to be smothering again because Carey, Austin, and Norman, that's a lot of athleticism and length.
Yeah.
From a perimeter starting group.
Okay. Speaking of defense.
I was just going to say the same exact wording. Take it away on Rodney Chapman.
Yeah, I want to talk about Rodney. He's a guy that, honestly, Dayton fans were pretty tough on him last year, and I understand it because he went through like a 15-game stretch where he contributed pretty much nothing offensively. But he didn't really need to last year because Dayton was just so good. And I think this year he's going to see a little bit more opportunity on offense. He really didn't take a whole lot of shots last year, but I think that's going to change. And he can shoot. He was a 36% three-point shooter last year. He's been a good shooter throughout his college career. And when you combine him being a decent offensive player with his fantastic backcourt defense, I think that makes him a borderline all-conference guy.
Yeah.
He got snubbed from the all-defensive team last year, which, to be fair, I didn't pick him either. It was a close call for me. But he just had so many good games defensively last year where he shut down talented players like Anthony Edwards from Georgia or Fats Russell twice. And I just think his defense kind of gets overlooked compared to the other guys like Jacob Gilliard and Fats Russell. But Chapman's just about as good as those guys. He's right in the conversation. And look, even though his numbers weren't overwhelming last year, he only averaged about 7 points a game. When you start every game for a team that went 29-2, you're a pretty good ball player. And
yeah.
I know that's not the best reasoning, but he was an important part of a really great team last year. And so I wanted to recognize him with my last pick.
I mean, there's almost it's like he couldn't have done much more than that either.
Yeah. Dayton didn't need him to shoot a ton of threes every game.
And you feel like with Landers gone, Dayton kind of needs a guy to fill that personality void in terms of like who's the mental leader and who's going to be the toughest guy on the floor. And he kind of fills that void of like, I want to defend the other team's best player. And like, we can beat these guys. Like, who cares? You know, fearless.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the keys. We know Crutcher is going to be great, but Dayton's going to need Ibby Watson and Rodney Chapman to step up and be those leaders, which I think they can be. That's why I put them both on my list. But I really think that's going to make or break Dayton. And that's the difference between them being a tournament team and an NIT team or worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I love Rodney Chapman's defense. I went on and on about this in our awards pod. Basically, you could see the trend of when were these games where Dayton struggled defensively and got torched by an opposing team's guard? Well, that directly correlated with all the games that Rodney Chapman was in foul trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw it against Kansas. You saw it against Colorado. You saw it against SLU. His value on the defensive end is incredible. I can't believe he didn't get more respect in the old defensive team voting. I just don't think he's that great of an offensive player, and maybe we'll see a difference this year with less guys around him, but that's why he's not on my list. So I'll close out with this. Jaren English.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last hot take of the day.
Really, I guess he kind of took the Tyrese Martin spot because I was so ready to go put Tyrese Martin way too high, and then he went to UConn instead.
Yeah.
Jaren English is just a guy that really is the first one to come to mind for me in the category of role players who could become borderline stars next year. Mm-hmm. And all I'm looking for there is the players who've had the fantastic flashes. For Jaren English, I think he's a guy who just basically didn't have the right role for the first half of the season for St. Bonaventure. And they were just kind of bouncing around with all of these analogous wings where you had Welch and English and Boca Bobby and Alejandro Vasquez and Justin Winston, and Ashun was hurt. Nobody basically understood what they were.
Yeah.
Once they locked in the rotation and once they had everybody healthy, Jaren English settled into his proper role of he joins Welch as the two perimeter shooters, but most importantly, he's their secondary playmaker behind Kyle Lofton. And you look at his games late in the season, the assist numbers aren't great for the year, but he had so many 4, 5, 6 assist games. You look at the game at Duquesne where Lofton kind of disappeared in the middle of the game, and English was the key to their big run while Lofton and Ashunahi were in foul trouble. He's a pretty decent three-point shooter who I think is only going to get better as his three-point volume expands. I said at the beginning of this pod, I'll say it at the end, I love the Bonnies next year. I think they're going to be a top three team. I think I'm most likely going to put them even higher than that come October. And Jaren English is going to be the key third guy. He's going to be the one that we're talking about as at the end of the year as, oh, this guy, he just does the little things. He sneaks in a 5-assist game here and there. He's shooting 40% from three. He has all of the intangibles that you look for in a fantastic third guy on a good team.
And he's rarely bad. Like even the games when he has like 8 or 9 points instead of 17, it's like if you look at his shots, he was still, you know, 3 for 7 from the floor. He's never gonna like totally lay an egg and go 2 for 12 because he's just a smart player.
I think the Bonnies are gonna have a really good third option next year, and that's what's going to make them a contender. I think it's going to be Welch instead, but you could definitely make the argument for Jaren English. He had a great first season with the Bonnies, and that's a good pick there. I feel like he kind of was underappreciated last year, and a lot of people didn't realize the numbers he put up. He was impressive, so that's a good pick.
Yeah, so as we wrap this up, either of you have any more comments on everyone's top 20 list?
I just have one question for you guys, I guess. Just out of curiosity, we were just hit with the big news that Marcus Santos Silva is going to leave ECU. Do you have any idea where you would have had him on your list? Because I was going to have him really high. I actually had him 6th, right ahead of Sincere Carey in my original list.
Okay, one of the best big men in the league then.
Yeah.
Okay. I had him at like the 14 range, like right around Hassan French, Oshun, right around there.
Okay.
I would have had him just slightly higher than that. I think really, to me, he's kind of tied with Oshun. So like right at 13, 14, where I think he's basically the opposite guy. He's, I guess, would have been the second best offensive big man in the league behind Trey Mitchell next year. I think they could have ran their whole offense through him, but I actually don't think he's as good of a defender as the VCU fans tried to make everyone believe he was. And so, yeah, he's kind of like the anti-Ashun, where he's incredible on offense and he's good on defense, but he just never blew me away on that side of the ball.
Okay. Yeah. He's a really smart player on defense, so he can get by with his savvy and positioning, but he's not quite an elite athlete. And like when somebody can just outclass him physically, he's going to have a hard time.
Yep. I think that hurts VCU a lot. I was ready to pick them as high as fourth or fifth. But losing him, I still think Bones is great, but the rest of their team's very unproven. So that's going to hurt. And I think that might be one of the biggest transfers of the year, which kind of sucks because it looked like VCU was at least going to be decent, but it's going to be an uphill climb now for the Rams, I think.
Yeah, and you know what? That was kind of unexpected. Hopefully we don't get any more unexpected news, especially with the guys on this list, because I don't know. I think that this might be a podcast that could really stand the test of time over the next 6 months. I mean, we're recording this in April, but as long as all these guys stay, I think this is a great discussion for us to still be having at the end of October.
Mm-hmm. My only comment on my list is sorry to Fordham, sorry to LaSalle, and I'm very sorry for GW having three players between 20 and 30, but none of them breaking through.
Here's my question. How big of a list would we need to make for you to pick a Fordham player? Like, would we have to go down to 50?
I'm a Soriana, so I might have him at like 32, 33.
I like him too. I mean, he was a good defender, but God, Fordham.
Yeah.
Man, we might need to do a whole podcast on how they're bringing back Jeff Neubauer for the last year of his contract. That's going to be a funny situation because it sounds like he's just dead at this point.
Yeah.
With a new athletic director coming in.
But they're going to make a Last Dance documentary down the line about Fordham's last season with Neubauer.
Yeah. I haven't come up with any preseason rankings just yet. I'm waiting a little more time to see if there's any more transfers, but I can promise you Fordham will be 14th again for my list. That's the easiest pick every year, and
Sharpie.
We'll see. Maybe they're finally going to do something with the new athletic director coming in. It sounds like they might actually be trying for once to make an
caring
effort.
About basketball.
We'll see. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
And by the way, we'd gone to top 30. I could have very well made a case for Josh Colon in the top 30. I actually think he's pretty good. But wasn't close enough. He's not close enough for me to name him an honorable mention for the top 20.
Yeah, they have a couple guys like Cobb. Cobb is like a top 40 player somewhere, but no one that could be like on the bubble for this.
Yeah, it's sorry to those guys. Sorry to LaSalle, too. I actually think they're going to be about the same as they were last year, but they just don't really have a go-to guy. I mean, their leading returning scorer is David Beatty, who averaged 10 points a game. So
yeah.
Their scoring is just so spread out. It's hard to zero in on one guy. Maybe it could have been Ed Crosswell, but he transferred to Providence.
Jack Clark could be a guy.
Yeah, him too. He was injured last year, but he was pretty good as a freshman, so that is a good name to keep an eye on.
Maybe we could do a future pod of guys that incoming rookies and transfers and guys that had to sit out that we think will impress.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the guys I left off because Clifton Moore could end up being pretty good.
Yeah, for sure.
So on that note, anyone else got some closing details to throw in here?
I just want to say that I think it's pretty fitting we're having this discussion right after the first couple parts of the MJ documentary came out, because the LeBron versus Jordan debates are as hot as ever, and it's a perfect time to be arguing about how good these players are. So I think it's good timing for us, and it's just fun to be talking basketball in April.
Yeah, agreed. Closing note for me, Trey, prove me wrong. Be the best player in the conference, because I would love that. So.
For me,
anything you got?
I'm all in on the Bonnies, and you already know I'm all in on TJ Weeks. We got 6.5 months till the season starts. I want to start talking about those guys now.
Love it. Thanks for having me, guys. I guess if that's it. It's been an absolute blast.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you to you, Stu. People can check out your work on Busting Brackets if they don't already, which would be a mistake if they don't. Follow you on Twitter, sledecky93. Anything else you got to plug?
No, just the writing's really all I got going right now. Been kind of on and off with that and during this quarantine, but once the season gets closer, probably start heating up with that. And I'd love to come back on and talk preseason tiers for teams. And like we said, the other newcomers and all that. So thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, a big thank you to you for coming on, Stu, and a big thank you to everyone listening to us through the quarantine, through the off season. Hope you guys really enjoyed this debate. As always, keep listening, tell a friend, follow us on Twitter at 3BidLeague. If you've got any questions for us to answer over the off season, send them our way. We're looking for easy ways to make content. Give us 5 stars on iTunes, leave a comment. We appreciate everyone who's been doing that. And I guess everyone just stay safe as things get crazy out there.
St. Joseph's season comes down to this. Miles gets a three. Fans, the Richmond Spiders are Sweet 16 bound. Denham Brown, 4-3, no good. By George, the dream is alive.